Your Money Replay from Money FM 89.3. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3. Money and Me, the property edition on Money FM 89.3, brought to you by Sim Lian Group, creating space, creating homes.
Today we start our very special Money and Me, the property edition. I'm Michelle Martin. Good morning. I'm sitting across Mohammed Ismail Ghaffour, Chairman and CEO of PropNex. He's joining me live and we're taking your questions at 9717-8893. Today we ask, if it worked for your parents, will it work for you? Traditional versus new ways of thinking of finding that winner on the property market. Good morning, Ismail.
Hi, morning.
Thank you for joining us. So, Ismail, upgrading, that used to be the key word. It used to be how Singaporeans see their property journey, right? Start small, work your way up, build a little bit of cash, and then hopefully roll it, hope for an en bloc maybe, then sell and keep building that pot of cash. So first up, what would you like people to know about the difference between what worked for their parents and the reality of the property market today?
I think fundamentally, if you talk about what our parents went through, the path is something that most of us will still be likely to follow through simply because property purchase a big ticket item. But what I've really changed here is from the perspective of affordability, salary income, and as well as the quantum of the property. Put it this way, 50 years ago, a landed bungalow at the East will cost $50,000. And I'm talking about close to 4,500 square foot land, and it costs about $50,000. And today, the same property is well above $7.5 million. Umpteen fold are we talking about? And that goes with public housing. We are talking about 40, 50 years ago, a three-bedroom at, again, on the eastern side, let's say, Mountbatten, Kampung Arang. My father-in-law bought it for $6,200. And the same three-room today, we are talking about $350,000 to $400,000. So it has gone multifold. So the older way of doing things here is this. People always say, start low and buy a public housing, a BTO, and then you will make your pot of gold and upgrade it to a bigger resale flat and private property and eventually a landed property if you could. I wouldn't say it is totally not possible, but the timeline, the properties that are able to appreciate multifold are not there anymore. I mean, people who bought the properties at $6,200 were able to sell at $50,000, and those who bought $50,000, the same three room, transacted at $100,000, and 100 went on to 250 and now 350. The question here is, if someone enters the market and buy a property at 350, will they be able to sell at 700, and will it go to $1 million? Not so likely, because Singapore as an economy was growing and therefore prices were low, but today we are relatively matured and therefore the prices keep pace with inflation, and there's also a constant watch by the authorities and the government because they want properties to remain affordable.
Wow. Wow, sobering figures there. So in light of the fact that you can't expect to grow from 50,000 to 7 million in the next five decades, what should you be doing? What are the real challenges for upgraders today?
I think what one should do here is this. Property investment should still be seen as a long-term investment with a minimum time horizon of ideally 10 years. And I don't encourage anyone to speculate thinking that they buy and then quickly they can get rid of the property so that they can cash out or buy in the bigger properties, because you may not be able to time right to catch the cycle, because any form of a global crisis may put a dent or take a longer time for you to make a real money or capital appreciation. So ideally, what I should suggest here is this. You should start right. In other words, you don't need to follow our parents' method of buying a first BTO flat and thereafter selling it and making the money. If you could afford straight away, for example, you could enter the market and buying an executive condominium if you qualify, or a private property. And again, because they have got different requirement and entry point, as what I would say is affordability. You don't need, because you don't have the time to buy HDB, hold on there for 5 years, then you sell, and then you take stages. It all depends on your income and your desire. One of the key things here is property is always seen as a positive way to grow one's wealth.
And that's still a fundamental. But you're saying you don't have to start with a BTO, because people think have to absolutely start with the BTO. You have the grants. You're saying look at the ECs.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a possibility.
Well, I think it's not wrong. I mean, I must say, put it this way. If I just do a comparison of a built-to-order flat and a HDB resale flat, the price point at entry level, we are talking about 20 to 30% cheaper. For example, a 4-bedroom built-to-order flat, HDB, from the government or from HDB, one would be able to enter the market as low as $250,000 at the outskirts, or the same 4-room at 1,000 square foot will cost you $500,000 or more in a central location. Versus a resale flat, you're going to pay 20 to 30% more. That means a 250 will cost you almost 350 and a 500 will cost you 700. But the good thing about the resale flat here is this one could get grant close to $100,000 or more, depending on their income. So families who are buying HDB resale flat will qualify for 50,000 grant if they're buying a 3 or 4 room, or 40,000 if they buy a 5 room and above. And again, a tiered income if the income is lower, like assuming somebody who earns an income of below 1,500 household get a 40,000 more additional grant. What the government has done in here is this: all public housing for Singaporeans at entry will be affordable. But that's a one bite of a cherry. You don't get grants again and again and again.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We have a question here. I want to buy an older HDB in the downtown area. It is less than 60 years on the lease. I hope to sell it after 5 years on the resale market. I think it's a great location. You can walk to the downtown line. Is this a good buy? Do you think I'll eventually be able to sell the apartment, or will I have to wait quite a long time on the resale market?
I think it is a very valid concern of many people. And one of the good news here is the government has, HDB has relaxed in terms of the usage of CPF funds for properties that are less than 60 years balance lease. That was a huge concern, people who are holding on to the older flat. And especially when we talk about downtown and in more central location, look at the master plan, the Greater Southern Waterfront, which was just announced in front of the Keppel and as well as Kent Ridge, Pasir Panjang and so on. So the entire rejuvenation of the master plan will definitely have got a rebound effect on the surrounding downtown areas, even though they are older flats. But I must say, to time exactly 5 years to exit may not necessarily be the best way. Ideally, I think it's good at least minimum 5 years. Anyway, someone who buys public housing will have a minimum 5 years occupation period. But you should time it that not more than 5 to 10 years. You should time the right time to exit. And I don't think you will lose money that much. But neither would you be able to have a huge capital appreciation for two reasons. One of the fact here is the lease is dropping. You must be aware of that. But based on the other surrounding areas and the master plan, I think you will be able to probably make some money.
Great reading there. There's so many new launches, Ismail. Some people might feel overwhelmed about where to start. So what do you advise someone trying to figure out which new launch to focus on?
I think, again, it has all got to do with affordability. When you look at Singapore generally, even URA, the authorities classify the real estate in Singapore in three regions: core central region, being the District 9, 10, and as well as the Shenton Way, the financial center areas, which is really the downtown, the core areas. Then is the rest of core, the outskirts of the core. And we are talking about Marine Parade, Novena, Kallang, Whampoa, Tiong Bahru, just the surrounding. And then outside the core center, which is the mass market. But then the price points are all totally different. If you take a new launch in terms of per square foot, the outlying areas will cost anything between 1,300 to 1,500 per square foot. That means a 1,000 square foot house will cost you anything in the region of 1.3 to 1.5. While the rest of core central, which is the outside the core central region, we are talking about anything between 1,008 to 2,005. And then the core central region, which is Orchard Road, we are talking about well above 3,000. Therefore, it is not where you want to buy. It is dependent on your desire, your ability, and as well as your finances. And I must say, today, for example, Treasure at Tampines is one of the biggest development, 2,000 over unit, and it is one of the most affordable entry, almost the lowest entry per square foot, starting at well above $1,300 per square foot. And the good thing here is this, today, one of the key things here is properties, developers have moved away from building bigger houses. And I don't mean that they don't have a bigger house as a choice. One could always start a house at as small as 500 square foot. And because the quantum matters for today's buyers, and that's important. Basically, it's about affordability.
The quantum matters. Okay, I want to ask you a broad macro sort of question. You know, it's an uncertain external environment. Just last week, we had an investor on, and his name was Kim Iskian. He's a macro diversifier. He says you shouldn't have all your money in one pot, and it's good to invest in more than one country. So what do you think about diversifying your property, buying into different geographic markets? Is that work for this generation?
I think for money market and capital investment is slightly different from property, because every country has got its very specific rules. And I would say it is not wrong to invest in overseas property, but one must really understand the dynamics of the respective country's rules. For example, I just give an example of an Australia. Singaporeans or foreigners can buy an Australian property at launch, but when they want to sell, they are not allowed to sell to another foreigner. They have to sell it to a local. That is the country's law. And that is specific to Australia, not Singapore. While in the case of Singapore, we can always, even foreigners are welcome to buy, but they have to pay a slightly higher stamp duty. And I give you another example. A Taiwan, you can always, you think maybe you want to place a little bit more peaceful, you invest in Taiwan, the capital gain tax is 45%. And then there are other countries where there's a devaluation of currency. You think you enter at a good price, but on the other hand, after some time, the devaluation of currency erodes all your capital appreciation. My suggestion here is this, for Singaporeans, why then a lot of foreigners are buying in Singapore? Singapore do provide a very resilient resale market, and we have gotten a very strong forward planning master plan in terms of rejuvenation. And globally, as a city, Singapore is still relatively affordable. And therefore, we should start the base in Singapore. And once we have done that, if you've got some spare surplus cash, understanding the right overseas market, then one could just diversify. That's all right.
So you're not against diversifying, but it's about when you do it, how much excess cash you have, and really whether you understand the rules in these different countries that we're talking about. Okay, so given where property prices are now, Ismail, in light of cooling measures, is property still a sector where people can make money? Or do you think right now people should be looking at property as a choice to make in terms of where primarily to live in rather than making money?
I think there's two ways that I look at it. Today, public housing is not meant to be seen as an investment property to make money. And we are talking about generations to afford. And therefore, the government is very clear with its intention in terms of demand and supply. That's why we used to see more built-to-order flats are being continuously supplied over the years so that the price is relatively stable. But on the other hand, when we talk about property as a investment, can one still make money? Obviously, I think it gives a huge advantage. And one of the key things is leveraging using the banker's money. And we are talking about if one can afford to buy a second property, or for that matter, even your first property, one should think it as an investment from the point that when we work, bulk of our CPF, bulk of our income is all channeled towards that particular property. Do we want to ensure a time when we want to retire or when we want to downgrade? Does this property give us good, reasonable capital appreciation? And when I earlier talked about leveraging means, when we buy a property, unlike if you want to buy a gold bar, if you want to buy in a stock, either you invest the full amount of cash outlay in a property, you take a loan, 80, 75% or 55%, and if you rent out the property and the tenant actually pays your mortgage, and over time you are able to have a pot of gold.
Ismail, you've conducted some 100 consumer seminars last year, I understand. And given the people that you've met and the questions that have come your way, what are some of the biggest myths of the property market that you would like to debunk?
I think to start with, we did in a fair bit of an explanations earlier. There are very young couples who come and they said the same thing. My parents say that I should start with a BTO, and that's where we can make the huge amount of money before we want to buy an upgrade to another property. And these are the very young couple who comes to the show flats looking at executive condominium as an option. And you know, executive condominium is an privilege for Singaporeans only at the start state. And it is really hugely subsidized to an extent. But they are going against the trend of the parents' advice, who says that you should start HDB before even you commit to an executive condominium. And there are also some young couples who comes to directly to a private property show flats because either they just want to fast track or maybe they just have a lifestyle of a greater focus. And to me, as I said here, is this, it is perfectly okay for someone to start with a BTO journey. But for someone who can afford, it is good if they can start with an EC or a private property. Yeah.
Here's a question from a listener responding to that earlier listener question. So earlier on, we had listeners saying, should I buy a property less than 60 years left on the land lease? So this listener is wondering, is there a cutoff point, Ismail, in the years remaining of a lease after which you would advise people never to buy a property?
I think it goes in two way that if I address this question in a very broad perspective. As far as the government gazette is concerned, all government land sales will be confined not more than 99-year leasehold. Let me just address it from a private property perspective. Mm-hmm. It's okay to buy a 99 leasehold property, and ideally if you're owning a property, and you should sell, pass on at least with balance 70-year lease for the next investor to enjoy and another 10 years before he sell it to the third investor. And by doing that, you will likely not lose too much of your investment, and high probability you will continue to enjoy a relatively decent capital appreciation. Then the question here is this, when should you totally not touch property? Singapore as a country, we don't have many properties that are less than 50 years. But the rule here is this, what happens after 99-year lease, here is the property comes to zero value. We have to return the land to the state. But there have also been huge number of people been able to enjoy on block an older property, even 99 with a balance 50-year lease. If it is in a great location, private developers are prepared to buy and pay you probably another 50% more because of the on block potential. But one of the key thing here is this, on block you can't time it, because sometime when the market is not right and you have a dire needs to sell, you may holding on to an older estate, you may not make that money. So generally speaking, if it is a newer flat, you should sell with the balance 70 years to someone else. Someone buying it at 70 years, sell it to somebody else before 60 years. And less than 60 years, yes, you will hold on to the property, but the capital appreciations will be relatively muted. That's for the private property. For public housing, same thing. The fact that now that the government has relaxed as far as the usage of CPF, properties that are less than 60 years, balance lease, still have got some demand if they are in good locations. But once it goes less than 40 years, 30 years, we have don't have that experience, but we can be certain if there isn't an on block potential, the estate is relatively, if it is not well maintained, there's going to be a higher maintenance cost because everything is all over there.
Great conversation. Lots of gems there. I hope we've helped you out with your questions. Thanks for sending them through as well. Muhammad Ismail Ghaffour, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
He's executive chairman and of course CEO of PropNext Limited, Singapore's largest real estate agency group. And next week, we're going to talk about how to make money from your property if you're at different stages of your life. Maybe you're newlywed, you're a family with kids, you're an older single person, finding yourself newly single perhaps. How do you make the most of your nest egg? That's coming up next week in Money and Me, the Property Edition.
Your dream of owning a private condominium is here. Contemporary Homes, nestled in a prime location with over 120 lifestyle facilities for you and your family. Visit Treasure at Tampanese Show Suite today, a development by Sim Leon Group.
This segment is brought to you by Sim Lian Group, creating space, creating homes. Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.